We have three cases on our calendar set for oral argument via Zoom. This is the second of those cases. This is A23-0176, Miller versus Meduna. My apologies if I'm mispronouncing that at all. Each party will have 15 minutes for their initial arguments, followed by 5 minutes by appellant for rebuttal. This is being recorded, so no other recordings are permitted. However, you will be able to access the recording of this oral argument within a few days. All other rules of decorum apply to this. And when you begin, please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. There's also a clock there in one of the squares to show you how much time you have left for your oral argument. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Tom Brown, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Heather Miller. And the question before the court this morning is whether the district court has the ability or the authority to remove a contested hearing from the calendar and allow a OFP to, quote, naturally expire, end quote. And I want to first start off by talking about the standard of review. Typically, I spend a lot of time addressing, you know, whether it's a de novo review or an abuse of discretion. I think that this is a de novo review because Minnesota Statute Section 518B.01 compels the district court to order a hearing once a case has been made on the merits. It did so in this case. However, it failed to actually have the hearing. So I think a de novo review is appropriate under these circumstances. However, if the court determines that it's an abuse of discretion, I still believe that the appellant meets her burden to show that the court, in fact, did abuse its discretion by failing to have a hearing in this matter. The timeline, I think, is really important.
Can I, counsel, so we understand there was an ex parte OFP. There are some continuances. Is a hearing date set for October 14th, I believe, and the day before the district court issues its, the OFP court, I'll call it, issues its directive. And in that directive, as I sort of read it, the OFP court decides that a number of the allegations in a petition can't be considered because they were part of a previous OFP that was dismissed by stipulation. And then says the remainder in the OFP court's view doesn't allege domestic abuse, therefore no OFP hearing. Says, you know, go talk to the family court, but it doesn't suggest explicitly, at least, that the OFP will be heard by the family court. It says that there are other motions that could be brought in a family court. So let's just look at, forget about family court for a moment, just look at this. It sort of looks like that directive decides, apropos of your argument, that on its face, the petition fails to state a claim that gets you to a hearing on an OFP. And that would be de novo, sort of like a motion to dismiss sort of standard, all right? The petition doesn't get you there. I'm wondering whether a district court can do that. Are you arguing it can't do that, that somehow that a district court has to have a hearing irrespective of what appears on a petition? Where's the error there?
Sure, Your Honor. Thank you. So I think the error is based on the fact that the court issued the ex parte order. So we've got a binding order in place pending a hearing. And had the court given the appellant an opportunity to be heard on those concerns, whether essentially the order from August 8th, 2019 constitutes res judicata, or for some reason we're collaterally estopped from bringing these claims because they've been presented to the court before, I think the appellant is entitled to an opportunity to be heard on those conclusions, especially given the fact that the court is raising this issue sua sponte, day before the hearing, this order, this directive comes out, and it's essentially a summary judgment order saying, you know, you don't have the sufficient facts to present this to the court when the district court has already, in fact, ruled that those facts were sufficient to order a hearing. So, you know, the matter was continued a couple of times to be able to adequately argue the facts surrounding the accusations related to domestic abuse on this young child. And to the extent that there were, you know, this child has had years of experiences with his father that constitute the reason and justification for the fear that he's had, of course, those previous facts are going to be reasserted and described to the court because it's a continuing fear that this child has. So to view new items in a vacuum of what this child has experienced over the course of his lifetime, and then use that to justify the dismissal of the petition, that's why we needed the hearing. It was to talk about, you know, the bases for the child's fear, why the child is continuing to have these concerns and raising these issues to his therapist, writing these letters regarding his father. You know, what was before the court is the child's current feelings about dad and having reasonable fear of bodily harm. So we believe the error with the court is to not allow the appellant the opportunity to be heard. And that October 14th hearing date, by the court just removing that date and directing the appellant to the family court, usurped the appellant's ability to obtain the necessary relief that she believed was appropriate for the minor child. And the family court has a lot. I'm sorry, go ahead, Your Honor.
If the family court, we have a very limited record in this case. The parties made reference to a December hearing in the family court. They talk about a motion in there. I don't know what that motion is. The transcript, there's apparently no effort at the district court to introduce the transcript of that hearing. So that's outside of our record. I don't know what the district court's order was in family court in December. Do the parties, your assertion, and I'll ask your opposing counsel, is that order, which we could look at, I just didn't have an opportunity to get it pulled up from a different record, but is that did not address the OFP. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, we made a motion to this court to supplement the record based on 55FA142659, which was denied.
And you didn't go to the district court thereafter to supplement, is that right?
Correct. Okay. You know, what we asked for in the family court file was a hearing on the merits of the OFP, which was denied by Judge King. At that time, we did address a number of other matters with the court. But you know, the distinction between these two processes is really significant. So the family court has limited tools to, under the best interest test, create boundaries and protocol for minor children and dealing with their parents. The OFP court is very different. The OFP court grants injunctive relief with criminal sanctions for violations thereof. And those criminal sanctions are obviously able to be elevated in the event that there's multiple violations of the order. The family court's authority, you know, is very limited in that regard. And violations of family court orders are obviously only pursuable by way of contempt. You know, coming back to the district court again months after the violations have occurred, as opposed to an order for protection wherein law enforcement acts typically within 24 hours. The consequences are much more severe. And the nature of abuse in this case is so significant that my client believed that the family court's contempt powers were not sufficient to thwart continued contacts by the respondent in this case, which is why she sought the order for protection in this matter. So 518B.01, I think, is very, very clear. The language states that the court shall order a hearing once a prima facie case has been made. And it was made on May 16th, 2022. The matter was continued twice so that the parties could have a hearing on the merits. And the district court just determined the day before that hearing is that this matter was better suited in the family court. Well, there's a lot of factors, I think, that are appropriate for the family court to address. This injunctive relief that she's seeking with a criminal sanction for a violation thereof is unique only onto the OFP process. So by removing that hearing and taking away her opportunity to be heard, what the court did is it subverted the legislative intent for these type of matters to not only be heard quickly, but be heard by the court once a prima facie case, you know, has been made.
Let's pause there. And when I'm looking at your brief, and this is wrapping us back around, you know, to the start of the argument, where is the argument that the district court erred in concluding that a prima facie case was not met? So, which is, I think, essentially what you referenced, and I understand why, but I'm looking for it in your brief, the argument that there was an error in, I don't know what that is. Oh, there was an error in considering some preclusive effect, a collateral estoppel or res judicata, or there's, you know, error in considering whether the rest of the affidavit in any event or petition would meet a prima facie prima facie case. So talk to me about that. Where do you argue that it's met?
Right. So in, yeah, in on page six, bottom of the page where we talk about Minnesota statute section 518 PB.01, upon receipt of the petition, the court shall order a hearing, which shall be held no later than 14 days from the date of the order for hearing, unless an ex parte order is issued. So I think implicit within that is the fact that there's a prima facie case made. In the event that an order is issued, then you have to have a hearing.
Because there was an ex parte order, the district court must have decided there is a prima facie case. However, a district court isn't held, even in any case, to its previous determinations. You know, I mean, it could decide differently. There's no law of the case within the same case, you know? So I'm looking in your brief for where is the prima facie case itself on the merits. Forget about what the district court decided.
Right. Well, I mean, I think in our brief, we were relying on the fact that the court in making its determination and its order that there has been domestic abuse found in this case that presents a current fear of bodily harm for the child. If you look at the court's initial ex parte order, that's what we're relying on. And I think that the argument really stems from this. Once the court makes that determination, then a hearing must be held. It could have denied the petition from the outset, saying that it lacked merit, I think under the same grounds, and we'd be in a very different procedural posture than we are here. And the court's well within its authority to make those determinations on what constitutes a meritorious order for protection application. And it did so here. It found that these accusations had merit and scheduled the hearing. And therein, I think, the appellant is then entitled to that hearing. So for the court to be able to kind of look at these on a one-off basis and say, well, there's a family court file open on this matter with the same parties, and you know this case is better suited for that process as opposed to the order for protection, I think is an improper judgment to make when the legislature has given this type of relief to individuals specifically to obtain the type of relief that my client sought in this case, injunctive relief with criminal penalties. So the failure to do that under this procedural posture, and especially given you know, the resources that were put into this order for protection case, we came to court twice. A guardian ad litem was appointed. An evidentiary hearing was scheduled. I think it was a half a day set aside to litigate this matter. The parties both had significant resources put into this, and it's an important matter involving a very young child. To then essentially get a summary judgment ruling from the court saying, go to the family court. So we go to the family court, and the family court denies the ability to bring this relief in its process. So, you know, I think a fundamental tenet of our process is an opportunity to be heard. And the judge may have had legitimate concerns about the issues that have been previously raised in this case and whether that constitutes a basis to issue an order for protection going forward. But those matters should have been aired on the record. The party's given an opportunity to present their testimony, to present their evidence, and the judge make findings under those circumstances so that that all parties have had an opportunity to be heard and present their case. And a ruling on the merits at that point would be appropriate. But the court's decision to kind of skip that process and substitute its judgment for what it believed the appropriate process to be, we believe is an error of law. And in the event the court determines that this is not necessarily a de novo review, it's an abuse of discretion. And I think the court has some guidance here that we cited in our brief with respect to the Houck case, H-O-U-C-K, very similar matter. The parties were involved in a dissolution proceeding. There were two HROs brought in that case. The court deemed, the district court deemed it appropriate to have those matters resolved in the family court case because there's, I think, much more opportunity to create relief that isn't necessarily just restrictive and injunctive. And I understand the desire to resolve family disputes in the family court. But this court determined that that was a abuse of discretion and ordered that the HRO be remanded and a hearing take place. I think the facts are very similar in this matter. And this case involves serious accusations of domestic abuse. And those accusations need to be tried to the court. And we're asking the court to reverse the district court's dismissal of the order for protection and remand this matter for a hearing on the merits. Thank you.
I have one question.
Sure.
Yes.
Go ahead, Judge.
Is it your position the court doesn't have the inherent authority to review its own orders and make a determination on the filings?
I think under the legislative direction of 518B.01, once an ex parte order has been granted, that there must be a hearing on the merits in order to adjudicate the case.
That it cannot just answer my question. You don't think the court has the inherent authority to review its own orders?
I think the court has the inherent authority to review its own orders, but to sua sponte dismiss a matter, no, I do not believe that authority is present in the district court.
Even though on review, the district court found that there were no allegations of domestic abuse?
I think if there's an opportunity to be heard and argue that, then I think that would be a different situation. But on its own, no.
But there's no ability on an ex parte order for the other side to present anything either, is there?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. And as soon as the timer is set, you may begin.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Stephen Dietrich, and I represent the respondent, Stephen Maduna, in these proceedings. Pursuant to the domestic abuse statute, a petition for an order for protection shall be accompanied by an affidavit made under oath stating specific facts and circumstances from which relief is sought. The affidavit must contain admissible evidence. An affidavit founded on mere hearsay and no personal knowledge should be rejected.
So it sounds, counsel, if I may interrupt, is there, I don't see in your brief any assertion that the family court actually heard and ruled on an OFP. Is that accurate? The family court. Did the family court hear and rule on a petition for an OFP?
The appellant brought a motion in the family court asking for an evidentiary hearing in the OFP file in front of Judge King, and then Judge King denied that request, saying that matter was before Judge Stevens.
Neither the OFP court judge or the family court judge heard an OFP, had an evidentiary hearing on a request for an OFP. Is that fair to say?
Correct.
Okay. So we can leave then. I think let's leave the family court out of this and just focus on the proceedings up till October 13th. So in the OFP court, there was an ex parte OFP issued, continuances at respondent's request, then an evidentiary hearing scheduled for October 14th. And on October 13th, it's dismissed sua sponte, or that hearing canceled sua sponte, and then the OFP matter is effectively over. What is okay about that, I guess? Why isn't that not a denial of an opportunity to be heard? And it seems like the basis for the district court's order, the directive, but essentially it becomes an order dismissing it, doesn't deal with what you're talking about, hearsay. You know, we don't have rulings about whether there's hearsay that might be admissible, et cetera. So we'd have to be doing that work ourselves for the first time about whether this is admissible, whether foundation is laid sufficiently, et cetera. But none of that is done by the district court. So, you know, it seems like it's asking us to look at the petition on a different basis than the district court looked at, which was essentially res judicata and then whether the rest satisfied the definition of domestic abuse.
The court, in its directive, stated that there was made, the petition made no allegations of domestic abuse.
Once you took out the pre-2019
correct
info, yes.
So made no domestic allegations of domestic abuse. The allegations in there were hearsay. There's nothing based on any personal knowledge.
But that's not part of the district court's directive, though.
Correct. The district court did say that there was no domestic abuse. So that's a district court's directive.
And why would that be? Why do that the day before the hearing? You know what I mean? Like, what would authorize that? Normally, like, if we're under, this is a summary proceeding, so we're sort of in a different world. These emergency summary proceedings, usually they happen more quickly than this because there aren't the continuances. If we're in district court in a regular civil matter, if summary judgment were granted or sua sponte, there'd be some notice to the other side in advance. There'd be some argument about it, opportunity to be heard on it. Why is it not at the very least maybe an abuse of discretion by the district court, if not, you know, not authorized for the district court just to do that here?
Well, the district court is allowed to review its previous orders. It's not bound by its earlier orders. And it came back and said there is no allegations of abuse here, and therefore it should be and then it. Effectively, it dismissed it as there was no allegations of abuse. The broad ex parte, the respondent didn't have any time to respond or any opportunity to respond to the ex parte allegations. And so,
doesn't that seem to beg for a hearing? I mean, the judicial directive does state that there are no allegations of domestic abuse, but it does state that the more recent statements, just focus on the more recent statements, relate to the minor child's mental health. And the affidavit from Miller alleges that Maduna used anger, intimidation, foul language, slamming tables, yelling, and badgering CM, and that the contact with Medina worsens CM's mental health and suicidal ideation. Why isn't that enough to at least have a hearing?
You need the affidavit, though. What is it? What is an affidavit? An affidavit has to be based on admissible evidence. None of that is admissible. She was not there. She's alleging things she has no personal knowledge of. She's alleging what is happening during his limited supervised parenting time. She has no personal knowledge of.
But that's not part of the judicial directive at all. You keep referring to hearsay, but the district court never made any ruling whatsoever as to what was or was not admissible. It seems that that directive is, you know, missing a lot of information and detail as to why it's not holding a hearing at all.
The statements, as the directive states, recent statements in the petition that are related to the child's mental health. As in order for protection, the correct place to address the child's mental health in the family file, that's more appropriate to have it there. There's more tools than to have it in an order for protection.
Why can't that be addressed by the district court? The district court can hear any subject matter. It's not actually as limited as the family court. That's one question. Actually, maybe a better question is, this seems strikingly similar to the Hauk case. And as you know, I'm intimately familiar with that because I issued that presidential opinion. Now, that case is different because that one focused on an HRO petition. This is an OFP petition. But both statutes require a hearing following an ex parte hearing if certain requirements are met. And in that case, we said that the district court abused its discretion because it did not hold an evidentiary hearing. Why isn't that precedential case? Why isn't that persuasive authority when this is basically the same situation, but just in an OFP setting versus an HRO setting?
I believe you look at the, I don't know, I'm looking, reviewing that case, it seemed the petitioner in the Hull case, her allegation, she had personal knowledge of. She had admissible evidence in an affidavit. This affidavit has no admissible evidence.
Again, we don't have that decision from the district court in this directive, though. I mean, I understand your argument, but you're arguing something that the district court never made a decision on.
I understand that that's why it's fine. There's no allegations of abuse. That's what the court determined. And whether or not, if it was based on, because she makes the district court directive says there's no allegations of abuse. So they have a hearing. It's the petitioner not entitled to a hearing if there's no allegations of a domestic abuse. With these ex parte orders, the respondent doesn't have a chance to respond. They're granted, they're enforced criminally, and he doesn't, even if you involuntarily violate these things, you're arrested and facing criminal charges. There needs to be some type of the affidavit, again, I go back to that, and has to be unadmissible evidence, and that's not happening. This affidavit contains no admissible evidence.
Shouldn't that be more appropriately determined in after a hearing as to what evidence is admissible and what evidence is not admissible?
Well, the ex parte OFP is already in place. It's already been granted based on admissible evidence, and then the court came back and reviewed it and said there's no domestic abuse, so it dismissed the OFP. To be granted a hearing on admissible evidence, that's not right and just. That's not fair to the people that are subject to these ex parte OFPs that are granted on inadmissible evidence.
Your argument is that it shouldn't have been granted from the start because on its face, it doesn't support, it doesn't include allegations of domestic abuse. I mean, essentially, right? That from the start, they should not even issue even an ex parte order. But then we get into, okay, well, we're here. Let's look at the district court's looking at the petition again. Does it satisfy the definition? You're making an argument that too much of it's based on hearsay. I, for the same reason, have some issues about that because, you know, there are exceptions to the hearsay rule that district courts generally decide in the first instance. But let's assume that the hearsay is not an issue. Why don't the allegations taking away the hearsay argument? What is it that doesn't meet a definition of domestic abuse if there's allegations, which Judge Reyes just read from, affect the child's mental health to the point that I think the assertion is the child is in some danger of physical harm. Can that not meet by definition the definition of domestic abuse? And I'd like to hear from the appellant's counsel as well. Domestic abuse has a definition: physical harm, bodily injury, assault, infliction of physical harm, etc.
Well, there's been no physical harm, bodily injury, or assault. Been no allegations there. The infliction of fear of imminent physical harm, bodily injury, or assault. That has not happened here. Ms. Verduna, in the past maybe 2 years, has seen his child probably a handful of times, maybe 10, under supervised conditions. Those allegations have never been brought up and there has never been any inflection. Child Protection Services was involved. They didn't see anything. She states that she contacted Child Protection Services. They didn't find anything. They didn't conduct an investigation, close their investigation. So this man has been vetted. This father has been vetted, has been under the microscope for the past 4 years. this is a third order for protection that's been brought against him since the child's life, who is now 11, and he's constantly defending himself. And the allegations should be admissible, and the rules of evidence apply to domestic abuse proceedings, except if they're exempt by rule or statute. And Rule 1101 of the rules of evidence provides a list of proceedings that the rules of evidence do not apply, and the domestic abuse are not listed on that list as exempted from the rules of evidence, and the domestic abuse statute does not say the rules of evidence do not apply.
Mr. Dietrich, one question I have. Mr. Braun indicated his belief is that the standard of review was de novo. What do you feel the standard of review is here?
Then the standard review is a discretionary with the court. That the court has discretion in determining whether domestic abuse has occurred. It has discretion when it goes back and reviews its prior orders. And in this case, it decided within its broad discretion to dismiss this order for protection. It did not abuse its discretion. It's not based on any erroneous view of the law or against logic and facts of the record. Thus, Mr. Medina respectfully requests that district court is affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal, and we will get the timer set for you. And once it's set, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I'll keep my comments to 5 minutes. So in response to the court's question about domestic abuse, Justice Smith's inquiry, domestic abuse is clearly defined under 518B.01 subdivision 2. There are three parens, one of which, paren 2, is the infliction of fear of imminent physical harm, bodily injury, or assault. So we don't have to make allegations that there's been actual assaultive behavior. The fear can justify an order for protection issuing. But I think that that gets us kind of into the weeds on whether the petition has merit or it doesn't. And I don't think that's really the question that is before the court. There was a determination made that the petition had merit. And that's why we have trials. And counsel talks about his client being under the microscope for the better part of 3 years. But there was no trial in this case, and that really, the trial is the microscope. It's the mechanism the court has to determine truth and fact. And by the court essentially removing the hearing on its own volition, my client's ability to have that fact-finding inquiry into whether this child has a current fear of physical bodily harm or injury was removed. And I think that if the court were to affirm this decision, it would create very dangerous precedent. It would be completely inconsistent with hope. For the court to just take away a protection order, to allow it to expire naturally for someone who the court has already determined is a victim, a prima facie case has been made that there's a victim of domestic abuse, would be creating really horrific circumstances for a number of people who one day believe that they have protection, and then a judicial directive comes through their attorney saying there is now no contact order, and go to the district court to argue about it. And then we get to the district court, and the district court says, well, that's the OFP court's determination. So that type of it's not my problem solution from the OFP court or the district court, leaves the appellant in this case without any meaningful remedy to provide the protection that this child needs as stated in the declaration, as set forth in the attachments. And that's why we have trials.
So speak to, I understand your argument, but if if you'll just instead indulge me, if the district court decided I'm going to revisit my determination about a prima facie case that I made originally, and I'm looking at this petition and I do not see a prima facie case made, how does this petition state a prima facie case of domestic abuse?
So the petition states a prima facie case of domestic abuse in a number of different ways. We've got the words of the child and the letters that were given to the court as attachments. My clients describing the escalating behaviors and the fear that this child has and the suicidal ideation that stems from, you know, dad's conduct and dad's anger. This all relates to the fact that this child believes he's going to be harmed, you know, by his father. And if the court was questioning, okay, do we have a prima facie case? I think that's a fair question for trial. But once a prima facie case has already been found, to then just reverse that determination without the ability to brief it. You know, I can even understand if the court were to say, all right, counsel, I've got some concerns here about what happened when, and isn't this res judicata? So we could develop a record, you know, to argue the fact that there are new circumstances and have a trial. So counsel's concerns about hearsay, you know, could be fully addressed on the record. You know, and this trial, we were going to have a guardian ad litem come in to testify about what the child said to him during the interview. You know, and I think that that's an appropriate way to get around the hearsay rule. But to just say, wait a minute, you know, stop, I'm going to disregard another judge's determination that there was a prima facie case made and dismiss this matter without an opportunity to be heard, and seemingly try to place it in the family court as if that was the solution to the problems presented to the court. The flaw in that logic is that the family court cannot order the relief that was sought in the order for protection, which is, you know, essentially an injunctive request with criminal ramifications.
Counsel, I have two questions. One is, would you agree that the district court does have the authority to dismiss an OFP if it determines that there's no merit?
Yes.
And it can dismiss it without having a hearing, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Hey, can you address directly then the district court's judicial directive that states that, quote, there are no allegations of domestic abuse? Isn't that a determination on the merits, which in essence is saying there's no merit to it here, so it should not be heard here in district court?
May I just respond to that briefly, Your Honor?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. So I think the answer on the face to that question is yes, that's a hearing, that's a determination on the merits. However, that determination is in direct contradiction to the same court's previous order granting the order for protection, finding that there is, in fact, a basis to order ex parte relief. And that's the major distinction, is that essentially the district court reversing itself without an opportunity to be heard has deprived the appellant of her day in court, which is why we're asking for reversal.
Excuse me, one question. If the standard review is de novo.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. You're muted there.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. If the standard review is de novo, then don't we just look at the allegations in the OFP filing and make a determination whether that has merit or not?
Yes, I think you do, Your Honor. But I think that the real issue before the court is not the merits of the petition. You know, we're not appealing that because the court, you know, found that there was merit to the petition. It's really the legislative mandate that after that determination has been made, a hearing shall be scheduled under 518B.01. I think it's that narrow issue, really, that's before you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments and your briefing. Very well done. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you both.